Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Support for this week's episode comes from the Google Pixel 3. We hosted this episode live from the Curiosity Rooms, where Google has been encouraging visitors to unlock their curiosity and make their everyday more extraordinary with a series of free workshops, talks, podcasts, and more. The Google Pixel 3 has been designed using the best of Google in a phone powered by AI. Extraordinary things are happening all around us, but we don't always see them. With Pixel 3, you'll never miss out again. Features such as Top Shot, Group Selfie Cam, and Google Lens are enabling us to rediscover and capture more of the everyday. The camera really is amazing, and I've been using it for a few months now, and I love it, so check it out. Thanks to the Google Pixel 3, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I have a note on my phone with like feminist stats, and then I just whip them out. I'm really cool, guys, and really fun at parties.
You're listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast, based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, a collection of writing by 52 women on what feminism means to them. I'm Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, journalist, and very, very proud feminist. I'm also the curator of this book and the presenter of the podcast. During this series, I'm going to be talking to a few of the amazing contributors who've written our book to find out how they found their feminism and some of the lies that they've been told about what it means to be a woman. This week, I'm so lucky to be interviewing two of my closest friends. Tanya and I met 4 years ago and we became close almost instantly. I'm inspired by her every day. She started out as a YouTube creator and blogger in 2009. 10 years later, she's a businesswoman and actor with a cosmetic line and 2 best-selling books under her belt. She's also the most determined and one of the kindest people I know. Alongside Tanya, we have Amica. Amica George and I met in 2017 when she started the Free Periods campaign. You may recognise her from episode 2 of the Feminists Don't Wear Pink podcast, but she was so great we wanted to get her back again. She's an activist who is genuinely changing the world, despite the fact that she's only in her first year at university. I feel mildly guilty that she missed a lecture for this podcast, but hopefully it was worth it. Hi guys.
Hello.
As we're in the Curiosity Rooms, I thought my first question could be, when did you first become curious about feminism?
For me, I didn't hear the label feminist, but I was always kind of aware of how feminist people thought, because my mum is really into books and she would have books like The Handmaid's Tale or Angela Carter. What's that book called? The Bloody Chamber? Is that a different book? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. But it's literally the most well-read.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
All the publishers in the front row are like, yeah. Yes.
And so growing up, I would read books like that when I was really young. So I could, but then I probably didn't understand them and I wouldn't have labeled them as feminist books because, yeah. So I don't
Sometimes
really know.
Sometimes I almost think that's better because I think when something's, for me, definitely a lot of the feminist thought that I read first was in books that I didn't know were feminist. Because I think probably if someone had been like, this is a feminist book, I'd have been like, I don't want to read it.
Yeah.
That's lame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that I kept like a book log when I was little of like books that I was reading, probably when I was about 10, and just like made a spreadsheet like on pen and paper that I drew out myself. And then I would put the title of the book, the date that I started it, the date that I finished, how many pages it was, because I wanted to like brag about how many pages I'd read. And then like a little comment and a smiley face or like an annoyed face or whatever.
So sweet.
And when I would read my mum's books that were like by feminist writers to begin with, I'd be like very weird. Just like a straight line mouth emoji.
I love that. I mean, I still kind of feel that about The Handmaid's Tale. Probably not going to say that. Yeah. Bit weird.
Bit weird.
What about you?
For me, I think it was almost kind of the opposite, whereas I heard the word feminism, and I heard people calling themselves feminists, but I don't think I ever actually understood what it meant. Like, I think I grew up in like quite a, like female-dominated environment with like a lot of strong women in my family, and then I went to a girls' secondary school, and everyone would like talk about feminism, and we'd have like assemblies about feminist writers, and I'd be like, wow, like they're really cool. But I don't think I really got it until I started Free Periods and started to like kind of unravel all of these, like in the book, all these myths and all these things that we've kind of been conditioned into thinking. Until I was like maybe 15 or 16, same, because before that I would just be like, yeah, feminism, like that's obvious and that's like normal for like a teenage girl to believe in.
Yeah,
but I don't really think I got it.
Yeah, and it is, I think when you start looking into the stuff, it is almost like these goggles that you put on and then you suddenly see it everywhere.
Yeah, so true.
You sometimes almost wish you could take them off. You're like, this is quite, I'm definitely that exhausting person at a party now that's like, that's actually a bit sexist. Maybe you shouldn't say that. Was feminism something that your parents talked to you about growing up?
Not for me. Like I said, my mum would have a lot of feminist authors on her bookshelf, and she had like a whole, my mum would like organise her books, and she had a whole women's bookshelf and things like that. So it definitely...
But would she still never have
she
said...
She wouldn't label it. Yeah. So she would never say... My mum would never go around saying, I'm a feminist, or these are feminist authors.
Yeah.
I just know that now that I'm older. So it kind of... It was ingrained in me as a child, but also not.
And yeah, I think women have been scared of saying that. Mm. I think what's amazing about our generation is young girls are really starting to... like own that label and enjoy it instead of it almost being this disparaging thing.
Yeah, I know. I think I've realized that it's become just like a really cool thing as well. Yeah. Just feminism has just become like a very Instagrammable thing. Like that's what this book is proving is that feminism is like, it's completely being overturned, and that it used to maybe be like a taboo, and now it's like
to be ashamed
the opposite.
Of.
Yeah, and now it's just everywhere, and it's just all over social media, and it's just like. Yeah, ever
it's
present.
Very cool.
You're so right. It's so good that it's become cool, because I feel like it was something that you would kind of label someone in a negative way. Like I remember when I was little, one of the first people who I heard labeled as a feminist was actually my best friend Katie in the front row. her auntie, and we'd be like, Auntie Sue is like such a feminist. And not that we like disagreed with her, it's just we thought that it had to be a really extreme thing to be a feminist.
Really?
And she probably is one of the more extreme feminists, but we couldn't identify ourselves as feminists, because we were like, no, she's a feminist and she's quite crazy.
And people would say it and it had all these things attached. It'd be like, oh, you know, she's a feminist.
Mm.
And that would mean like, she's single, she doesn't wear makeup.
Yeah. She doesn't wear pink.
Doesn't wear pink. She doesn't wear Britney mics. So both of you, speaking of social media, both of you really have used social media in different ways for activism and feminism and kind of getting these messages out there. Tanya, when did you, because you kind of came at it from the other approach where you had this huge social media following and then you really started to use it for the kind of things that you believed in. When did it occur to you that you wanted to take what you were doing online further?
I just spoke to you about this yesterday, that for me it comes in kind of waves, and I'll suddenly think, oh my god, I'm not doing enough. And I literally text Scarlett yesterday saying, I was like, please, I was like, are you at home? I need to come over. And she wasn't at home.
Yeah.
Really busy like promoting her book. But I was like, I'm not doing enough. I feel like I've not done anything to kind of help other people or
do something to spread word about something important for ages, and all I've been talking about is like what I'm eating or something. So I feel like I've always probably realized that I had people following what I'm up to and my beliefs and ideas and stuff for maybe like 3 years into doing it. Yeah. And but then I will suddenly like forget and not do enough for a while.
Was there any fear when you first started talking about feminism more? You know, poverty is sexist, or when you went away? Did you get any backlash?
I can't remember when I first did it, if I did or not.
Did you get comments from boys?
No. Yes, I did. Yeah. I think I probably spoke to you about it. Yeah, I did like a little, like a mini campaign around the global goals with your parents and you. And yeah, of course there's backlash and people saying, people like to accuse you for, so they'll say, oh, feminism isn't important. There's people dying in this country. And I'm like, I know, but I'm just trying to raise awareness about this thing, and you can't raise awareness about everything all at once.
Yeah, it's that whole thing of like, what aboutery, where it's like, oh, you care about feminism, like, what about this?
Yeah.
And you're like, that's also awful, but I'm doing this thing right now.
Yeah.
Amica, you started this campaign and then really used social media to get the message out there. How did you utilise those tools that I think a lot of people think are only for sharing, like pictures of your food or pictures of your outfit, to genuinely change the world?
Wow.
Well,
yeah, I mean, for me, when I started my petition, it kind of just seemed obvious. As the, it seemed the obvious thing to do. When I read about period poverty, I told my friends and family about it, and I knew that obviously we have the internet, and it's very clear that that's kind of the way you go. For me, growing up online, that was always the way you got your message out there.
Yeah.
And until then, I hadn't really had like a message or a big idea that I wanted to tell people about. But an online petition, and then, you know, that seemed obvious. And then putting it on Instagram and Facebook seemed obvious. Mm-hmm. And then only like maybe a month in, I realized actually this is a lot bigger than just me posting it online, because there are other people posting it, and there are, you know, interviews and all the stuff that you can do that just makes it grow and expand even more. And then that's when I realised, that it isn't just me or campaigners who want to use social media for more than just the stuff that, like, you know, the, like, influencery stuff. It's actually just teenage girls who they don't. I think we've had social media for this amount of time now, and everyone's used to it, and the novelty's worn off. So it's like now we can use it for stuff that's really amazing and actually impactful, because it is so impactful. Like with our protest, which 2,000 people came to, we did everything online, you know, other than like my closest friends and family, who I said, come to Downing Street at 5 o'clock. Everything else was on Instagram, and like just one person with like more than 1,000 followers posting it would have got a couple of people out. And so it's
such an impact. With that, a lot of people thought it was the big people posting that kind of got people, and that did really help. But definitely what we saw, because we worked together a lot on the campaign, was people with just, you know, a few hundred followers who were posting it, but then all their friends see it and are more likely to digest it because that's someone you really trust.
Exactly.
And then those, I think, were the people that ended up bringing the biggest groups, because actually this real grassroots, like, trickling of a message can sometimes go further than big people.
Definitely.
One of my favourite things was what Suki Waterhouse posted, though. Do you remember that?
Yeah, she posted a picture of herself in a bra and knickers, right?
Yeah.
And then she said, right, now that I've got your attention, come to a process about periods.
Oh, that's
it.
So
was
good.
Really good.
It was really clever, yeah.
It was very, very good. I think she's removed it. I always try and find it. A lot of people talk about the way that things like Instagram, in particular, I think, can be damaging to young women and to feminism, because, you know, it's often what you hear older people say is like it's destroying young women and they're just all comparing themselves. Do you feel this, or do you feel this among your friends?
I personally don't feel that way. I feel like it could have that potential to do that to people, but I have people say to me, you know, bitching about Instagram, being like, oh, I can't even go on it anymore, all I see is this, that and the other. And I just think, well, don't follow those people.
Yeah.
And me and my friends are just, we're not those kind of girls who want to be negative. So we just follow what we like. And if I don't like someone anymore, I either unfollow them, or if I feel like I can't unfollow them, I'll just mute them.
Yeah.
I just think you can take what you want from the internet, and there's so much great stuff out there. And like, that law would not have been passed if we didn't have social media.
Yeah.
And
I think you see a lot of that. It's actually, sometimes when I scroll through my mum's Instagram, I'm like, oh, this is horrible. You're only following people you're jealous of. And then she scrolls through mine and it's just like mad illustrations of vaginas and stuff. Great. It's much funner. Do you see it? Because a lot of your friends obviously are very young because you're an actual teenager. Do you see it among your friends? Do they get pressured, or do most of them use it for good?
Yeah, I mean, I think with my generation, we are, like, everyone's very aware of the negatives of social media, I think, just because of the fact that we've, like I said, the novelty's worn off and we've had it for a while. And so now people are starting to, like, reclaim it in a way, and just kind of, people still do use it for the stuff that's, like, very typical teenagery. But I think it's often, like, the bigger stuff that can be more negative.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, like, me and my friends do, like, mass unfollowings of, like, people that we don't care about anymore, or we don't think are going to be like good for the way we feel about ourselves, which I think is really, really important.
Yeah,
I call it detoxing your feed.
Yeah
very good.
So this book is all about kind of the lies that we've been told about what it means to be a man or a woman or a feminist. What is one lie you've been told about what it means to be a man, a woman, or a feminist?
Just that.
I feel like it's interesting because there's a lot of lies that are told to men, I feel like, just as much as women, and about how they have to be strong, or the worst word in the world is manly.
Yeah, or man up.
Yeah, man up. Or like grow some balls, like any of those. And I've definitely used those sayings before. But yeah, I feel like the pressures that are put on everyone to be what's expected of them.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how
toxic masculinity,
but also talking about how in school it would be a shock if a girl got an A star in science, whereas if it was a boy, it would just be expected of them. And whereas we're seen to be good at English and drama and the humanities.
Yeah, completely. And like the number of girls going into STEM and all of that. I actually love maths, and I think at school I thought it was like weird to like maths. I quite like it. I'm not very good at it, but I really like it, which is a weird
You're really good at coding.
I am.
Which is something that I think, again, is like really shocking when a girl knows how to build a website.
Yeah. What about you?
For me, it would come back to teenage girls and politics, and the idea that girls just teenagers don't care about politics.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's that teenagers don't care about politics, it's just that they don't care about traditional politics.
Mm.
They don't care, I mean, not don't care, but now I think for our generation, it's not so much kind of whatever MPs are doing in the House of Commons or like, you know, legislation, it's the issues that matter to us.
And,
and the fact that politics has become so issue-based, and like free periods has proven that politics are just posting something on Instagram. It's just posting or just telling someone about something. That's political, and that's having more political impact now than like voting for an MP every 5 years. So I think that's really important for our generation now. And I also think it's really important for politicians and MPs to realise that in the future we are their employers, like we're the ones who keep voting for them and having an influence in the political system, so surely they should be listening to the issues that matter to us and what we're posting on Instagram.
I love that, and I think you're completely right. And I think historically there's been this kind of idea that young people don't vote and don't care about politics, and that's why politicians don't cater to issues that affect us, because they're more likely to put things in place that, you know, get the people that actually vote. But, you know, if everything we do together around free periods and anything we do at Pink Protests, it's like young people are so engaged.
Mm-hmm. I feel like now more than ever, I feel like young people didn't used to be as engaged.
Yeah.
I wasn't engaged with politics when I was 14, but I feel like any 14-year-olds who follow me now are engaged because they're on social media. And I honestly think that it's helped so much with young people caring about politics, not just in their country, but all over the world.
Yeah.
Like most 14-year-olds I was going to say 14-year-old girls, but 14-year-old girls and boys would 100% know about what's going on in America with Trump, probably on a weekly update, know what's going on because of social media. Whereas when I was younger, I wouldn't have had a clue about American politics.
Totally. And that kind of ties to how you started Free Periods. And something I wanted to ask is, like, something that I get thrown at me a lot is, like, you know, why do you even need feminism? Like, look at you, you're like a white middle class girl with, I mean, it used to be pink, now it's orange hair. You know, like, why do you need it? And it's that thing of trying to explain that it's not just about women like us, it's about this movement that's going to help women across the world. But what was it for you about period poverty that made you want to do something and make a difference?
For me, it was something that I'd never had to suffer with myself. But I think just being a teenager and being a girl going to school, and also the shock of kind of growing up in this bubble where it definitely didn't affect any of my close friends or my family, and realizing that it was a thing, and also that it had been happening not just in the UK, around the world, but forever. Obviously, it was happening in 2018 or 2017 when I found out about it. It's been happening for a really long time and no one was talking about it. But I think the main reason I did something about it was just because Theresa May wasn't, or David Cameron. As I just think at the time I was just kind of really shocked. I think it was raised in Parliament and Justine Greening, who was the Education Minister at the time, refused to answer. And it just kind of really hit me that, you know, somebody was standing up and saying girls in the UK aren't getting an education because of periods. They're not going to school because of poverty. And I just think it's the most it's just the most fundamental thing that is, if girls aren't going to school, that's immediately holding us back in terms of, like, economic progress of the country. If girls aren't going to school, they're less likely to, you know, get a degree and go to university and have an amazing job and feed back into the economy. So surely solving period poverty is like a win-win for them as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why it's so vital. And it's just, it's a human right that every girl should go to school.
What's fascinating about her not answering that question is that if you'd said to her they're not going because they don't have pencils, she would definitely have answered. Like, I think the issue is the shame and stigma that we still feel around our period.
There's an MP who refused to say the word tampon in Parliament. When we have a House of Commons who are 70% male and one of them can't say tampon, probably more than one, like, how are they going to stand up and vote for a bill on period poverty?
Or not even that, just how are they going to have women's best interests in their heart? You know,
they don't.
I think we know that. Tanya, I think, so you have a big following and I think you used it very well, and there can often be a kind of fight within the feminist discussion around, like, whether if you have influence, it's your responsibility to use that for good. Do you feel like it is your responsibility, or do you just feel like you do it because you love it?
I do it because I want to.
Yeah.
I don't think I do feel it is my responsibility, because I think it's up to anyone what they want to do on their social media. I don't judge anyone else who chooses not to discuss politics. It's just something that I'm interested in. And like I said, I definitely go in waves of it. I go through waves where I read the news every single day and then I don't read it for a week.
Yeah.
And so for me, anything that shocks me, whether it's, you know, seeing something amazing that I want to Instagram, or seeing something that makes me really, really sad, I'll talk about it. And and that's kind of how I approach my social media.
Very interesting. Who are some of your feminist heroes?
You. I know, honestly. You're the person I come to and I'm like, I need to do more stuff. And
no, it's just because you have my number.
Yeah.
You don't have Gloria Steinem's number.
No, I don't.
That wish. Cool. Yeah.
I think I talked about this in the book, but by the book. I talk about my great-grandma, who is my feminist hero, because of the fact, like we were saying, she probably wouldn't have called herself a feminist, but she, like, epitomised feminism for me, in that she kind of grew up in, like, a village in South India and was expected to get married and have kids and kind of lead the very kind of traditional, like woman, like female housewife mm-hmm. life. And she did that, and then she decided that actually that wasn't enough for her, and she decided to get on a plane on her own for the first time when she was in her early 30s, and flew to Ohio and did a degree in English literature and then a master's, and then became a professor, and then came back to India and wrote for the paper, for like national papers about women's issues. And like, I just think that's, for me, that's feminism, when you're kind of breaking those boundaries and expectations and just doing what you want to do regardless of like gender expectations. Yeah. And yeah, I think it's interesting that she probably, feminism wasn't such a thing at the time, but it existed even though it wasn't kind of conceptualized.
It's incredible. And I think you're so right. And for me, my next question was like, how, because, you know, both of you have had periods where you have dedicated your days and your lives to activism and, you know, gone on trips. But for a lot of people, that's not realistic. You know, we've all got jobs, we've all got lives, we've all got, like, you know, we're all meant to be working out and we're not, and all of that stuff. And it can be really hard to be like, oh, I also have to do feminism and do activism. What? And that's an amazing example where just by living her life and not bowing down to the things that society wanted. I think sometimes it can be as small as that, just trying to resist. But what's something you think people can do every day that is a feminist act?
I feel like being unapologetically themselves, like another person that. Is going to say is such a hero, is someone like Patti Smith, who is just herself unapologetically. And what makes me think of her is I saw Florence the Machine last night, and she sang her song Patricia, which she wrote about Patti Smith.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I didn't know that either until she said it on stage last night. And I was like, oh, I was like, who's Patricia? I was like, listening to it on Spotify. And I just think people like that who just go about their lives. Mm. And
Florence is also like that.
Florence, 100%. Yeah. And just be women who can just be themselves, and men too, who can be themselves and just try and break down the barriers every single day in like tiny little ways.
Yeah.
And call people out.
Yeah, that was
so if you have a, if you have like a, it's often like middle-aged men making making comments to you, just say no, it's not like that, and then correct them, and they'll probably just be completely kind of taken back. But that means you, that's activism like done in a second.
Something I would say is arm yourself with facts. Because then if someone, it can be, people can very quite easily like deny your opinions. But if you're like, actually, 1 in 7 girls in developing countries is out of school and 131 million girls worldwide don't get high school education, they're like, oh, okay, sorry. Actually, and also this, the book is only called Feminists Don't Wear Pink because one of my dad's middle-aged friends, male friends, said to him, I really like All Scarlett's activism, but like, she really needs to quit with the whole wearing pink thing.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. What do you think?
Mine was just calling out the little things that you like that just don't sit right with you, just like just saying that's actually wrong. And also just like doing things, like, so I was just thinking on my way here, I got on the tube and there's this guy, it was like quite empty, and there's this guy just like massively manspreading. So even though there were definitely empty seats, I sat next to him and just did the same thing. And
oh my God,
and he just like immediately
that.
Was just like, oh, okay. And I was just like, you know, I don't care. But I just think things like that, like even just having conversations about things like that.
Yeah.
Like I talked to my dad about manspreading and like just other random things. That we've just like been conditioned to normalize in our brains, and only when you start to question it and think, actually, why is it that women can't do that, or why is it that we accept the fact that men do that, that's when you realize that feminism is actually really needed.
I love that, and it can be that simple. And I also would say to anyone that that seems, because when I was, even like a few years ago, if you'd said to me, be yourself or call people out, I'd have just been terrified of it. But sometimes it can be just like trying one little thing. So like when you're on the tube with no one that you know, like doing something like that, or, you know, going, if you always wear makeup, going out for one day without it, and it can almost get addictive.
Yeah.
Like I think you're like, oh, this feels great. Like I feel being yourself feels great, and kind of standing up to the things that you've been told not to can actually, I would say feminism is almost like self-help, can make you feel really good.
It's like a mini revolution every day.
Yeah, completely.
Profound.
What, you're not that much older than this, but what advice would you have given to your 15-year-old self?
Probably to be less afraid to share my opinions be less afraid to be myself.
Yeah.
God, it's so hard. It's
less
so
afraid
hard.
To share opinions is huge.
Yeah.
I was terrified to share my opinions.
Yeah.
Mm. I just wanted everyone to think I was nice.
I was also so scared of being wrong. So it wasn't just that I thought my opinions might upset people. I think that I've got friends in London who went to amazing schools and their schools were all kind of teaching them to speak their mind and do this and do that. And I didn't go to a school that helped me with that at all. Mm. And I just think that I don't know where my kids will go to school, but even if they go to a school that isn't helpful, I want to be able to help them at home, be like, help them share their opinions more and be more outspoken.
Yeah. And it's also something for schools to do.
Yeah.
I think. What about you?
Yeah, I think just care less generally.
It's,
again, about not about everything. Don't care about anything. No, just like care less about what people think.
Yeah.
Don't worry about like disagreeing with anyone, or don't care about like sticking out of the crowd, and I think it's quite easy to get into like a bubble, especially like at secondary school. I felt very like expected to like dress a certain way or be a certain way or like have like the normal opinion, and actually like only when I started to question that and like break out of that, that was like the happiest that I felt.
Yeah.
So I would have told my 15-year-old self to care
less
about being cool,
but not about your A-levels.
Care about your A-levels
now at Cambridge. Okay. There's loads of bright lights here, but like I see a lot of long hair and a lot of women, and I think something we get asked a lot is how do we get men more engaged with the feminist movement? What do you guys think?
Talking to them about feminism, I'd say.
And
like making it applicable to their lives also, because it obviously does affect everyone.
Yeah.
And like going back to the whole toxic masculinity idea of like just kind of making them question the things that they've accepted, and just like the little things. Mm. I think just kind of identifying them, because I mean coming back to periods always, they are really curious about the things that don't affect them.
Yeah.
And like the other day, like this was a couple of literally like in summer, I was on holiday and I was like walking down the street with my brother, and this like creepy guy came up to me and was like being weird and like asked my number or something. Mm. And I just like ignored him and walked away, and my brother was like, oh my god. And I was like what? And he was like, well, what are you gonna do about it? And I was like, I don't care. Like, and he was like, has that happened to you before? And I was like, he has no idea. Like,
so
things
funny.
Like that don't happen to my brother, obviously. And he was like, I was talking to my mum about it, and I was like, unless they see that or like hear about it, they just don't know. And like, periods are the same. Like, I talk to my brother about clots now because he doesn't have a clue what they are. And he should.
They definitely should. My little brother had the same thing when he was like 15 and he watched Orange is the New Black, and he came running into my room and he was like, Scar, I get it. And I was like, what? And he goes, like, I get how you feel, because I was watching Orange is the New Black and suddenly I felt like an outsider, and I realised that's how you feel all the time. I was like, not all the time, but when you're watching like The West Wing.
That's really funny.
It was really cute. That's
I so feel cute. Like it would help if there when there are events like this, is if on social media, if people, when they're posting tonight, post more like of the men who are here. I can't see anyone past the front row because of the bright lights, but I just think that a lot of men feel like it's a woman thing.
Yeah, and they're not allowed. And that you're right.
Well, they're not invited.
Curious.
Yeah.
All men are invited always.
Even Jim, often when we have like dinners, he's like, am I allowed to come, or is this just a feminist woman thing?
Mm.
I'm like, you're always allowed to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to start doing events that are BYOB, so you can only get in if you bring your own bloke.
That's so good.
All our events are only women. Okay, we thought we could do an audience Q&A. I think there are some roaming mics. It's quite scary to ask first. Oh, yay.
So I was wondering, with coming up with Christmas, I find that when I go home, a lot of it is like, oh, don't start Effie off on one of her feminist rants again.
Yeah.
How would you arm yourself to be like, I'm not being an awful person who wants to ruin Christmas, but you're actually ruining my day?
Yeah. I get that constantly. And also it's always about things that actually I don't care about. Like the other day my dad was like, oh, Scarlett would hate this man. And I was like, why? And it was like, he once cheated on his girlfriend. And I was like, that's fine. Like, what about? I think...
It's not fine.
I mean, it's not fine for her, but it's not like...
Don't cheat on your girlfriend.
But it's not a feminist issue. Like, loads of women cheat as well, you know. I don't know. It was just... It's weird. I think almost I try and make it a joke. I'm like, oh, look at me. Like, I know it's not good to be self-deprecating, but if it's with people you love, you can kind of make it funny. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Oh, it's so hard because I'm really bad. Like, if it's a family thing, I probably do what I shouldn't do. And I just think I just won't talk about it with you because I just want to have an easy life. But I know that's not the right thing to do. I don't know.
You know what, though? Like, it is annoying and people do kind of call me out of it. And sometimes I'm like, oh, obviously I would say this. But over the last few years, I've seen my family change. Like, they don't make the same jokes they used to make. And they're all lovely people, but they did used to make, like, you know, fat jokes about women and, like, just little tiny sexist things, and they don't as much anymore. And there's definitely this period where they were like, oh, probably shouldn't say that in front of Scar. And now they just don't say it. So if you can, it's kind of worth...
That's worth it. Worth ruining Christmas.
But you also... Yeah. Ruin Christmas, all of you. yeah, but also you don't have to if you don't want to, you know. You don't have to ruin Christmas. Okay. Anyone else got a question?
Yay.
Hi. Yeah. So I was thinking, I think I've seen intersectionality become a lot more mainstream in the feminist movement, which is amazing, but I was interested, do you ever feel the pressure of trying to sort of be inclusive and but also sort of stay true to your own feminism, and how do you think we can sort of make sure the feminist movement grows but is still intersectional and inclusive for everyone?
I don't feel pressure, but I think it could confuse people, and that's the only thing I think can hold people back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's like a really amazing thing that people are starting to talk about intersectionality and also making it just more linked to feminism, and like making like all feminism should be intersectional. Yeah. Obviously. And I think it's it's good that people are more conscious of that, because I think we're at that, again, that's only something that's in the process of happening. Like, it's not, we can't like take for granted that all people's feminisms are intersectional now. So I think it's good that people are talking about it, and I think it needs to be continued to be talked about. And I think it's just, yeah, very easy to paint feminism with one brush. Is that the expression?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Just kind of be like, yeah, feminism, that's equality, and everyone with having equal rights, and like it is, but it's more than that, and it's also just it's everybody included in that, and just understanding that like the female experience is different for everyone is just really important.
Yeah, I feel like being conscious is of things is the most important thing with like every single issue. And for me, I remember when I first heard about intersectionality was actually from Tandy at one of your very, I think it might have been the very first pink
one, yeah.
Protest. Was it a pink protest night back then?
Had a different name then.
Like a couple of, like maybe like 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago. And she did a whole, I was sat in it, we were doing like little group discussions, and Tandy did a chat about it. And it completely educated me on the subject because I had no idea. And I was like, oh, you're so right. And it's just important to be aware and I think talk to people about it, because not everyone does understand.
Yeah, and I think the pressure historically has been on women of colour and minorities and intersections within the feminist movement to explain themselves. And I think actually it's pretty good that the pressure now is on white women to be like, we've really messed up in the past and like that's on us and we need to make an effort, you know. And I think if you understand it, explaining it to your friends is great, because I think a lot of women don't understand it, and then that holds them back from embracing it because everyone's scared of things they don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? Not in there, this one there.
Hi. You said arm yourself with facts, and I have a family of particularly opinionated white male men.
Nice.
And if I wanted to stir shit up this Christmas, what crash course in facts would you send me to, or like where resources would you send me to?
Well, there's actually a very good section in Feminist Notebook Pink called Feminist Comebacks, which has got a lot of facts in. Girl Up have a lot of amazing stats. I always go to like all the UN websites and different organizations have like masses of facts, and you kind of know that they're very legit. So I always go on UN websites. I also think it sounds really lame, but literally making a note in your phone of like, I have a note in my phone with like feminist stats, and then I just whip them out.
Yeah, I wish
I'm really cool, guys, and really fun at parties.
Yeah, there's one about there are like four times as many men called Mark as women who own FTSE 100
yeah,
companies.
Yeah, all people of colour.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous.
As women who what?
As women, just women.
What? That's such a cool fact.
I know.
It's not cool.
No, but it's a useful fact.
Yeah, just things like that that really just like hit home, like hit
I'm finding
hard.
Things that apply. Like, I think for me, the fact that only 33% of members of parliament are women is huge, because it just those are the people making the laws about our country, and it's so unequal. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank
you for being feminists.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, or even if you didn't, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies, published by Penguin Random House, is available to buy now via the link in the description of this episode. All of the royalties from each book sold go to the amazing UN organisation Girl Up, who are supporting girls across the world. For more information and to join our gang, please follow us on Instagram at feminists. Thank you so much to Audio Boom for helping us get it out there, and to the wonderful pink feminists who've joined us as guests.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.